May it please the Court, my name is Dawn Connolly, and I represent the appellant Freeman Holman. We'd like to begin with our lead argument that Mr. Holman is entitled to a new trial because he received ineffective assistance of counsel at trial. If this Court so holds, it would be unnecessary to address our remaining three arguments. My client, Mr. Holman, is entitled to a new trial because he received ineffective assistance of counsel when his trial counsel told the jury to find him guilty of conduct to which he at all times denied and entered a not guilty plea.
Did he testify?
Yes, Your Honor.
On that 6.68?
No, he did not testify on count one to which his trial counsel told the jury to find him guilty.
No, so when he testified, he talked only about planning the evidence and all that sort of thing.
There were two, the counts here, he was charged with four counts. Count one was charging him with possession of crack cocaine and intent to distribute on October of 1999. Counts two through four charged him with activity on July of 1999, and it was those activities he was questioned about in his examination. In this case, the fact is that Mr. Holman admitted nothing. He entered a not guilty plea to all four counts. Despite this fact, his trial counsel, Attorney Nakos, told the jury to find him guilty of count one, which charged him of possession of crack-based cocaine with intent to distribute in July of 1999.
Could you find any case, because we couldn't, where a lawyer actually held up the verdict form and told the jury to find them guilty, find the client guilty?
No, Your Honor, we have not found a case like that, but that is the fact in this case. Attorney Nakos went as far as to, in closing argument, to tell the jury to check the guilty box on the verdict form. And this was any type of trial strategy that the government may allege that Attorney Nakos had was so fundamentally flawed that it was a not at all trial strategy for three reasons. First, because the defendant admitted nothing. Second, because the law requires that trial counsel seek his client's consent before he plead his client guilty. And finally, because Attorney Nakos' admission to the jury of Mr. Holman's guilt on count one subjected Mr. Holman to potentially the same sentence on the drug count. The cases that the government cites in their brief for the proposition that consent is not required for trial strategy are distinguishable from the facts in this case. In those cases, some of them deal with situations where the court found that the defendant, in fact, consented to his trial counsel strategy. The remaining cases are scenarios where the trial counsel told the jury to find his client guilty of an altogether different crime. For instance, the trial counsel would have told the jury, my client may be a rapist, but he's not a murderer. The fact in this case is distinguishable from those cases because Attorney Nakos told the jury, my client is a drug dealer in a case that charged him with just that, being a drug dealer.
Now, when this 0.68 of, that's not very much. Isn't that user quantity?
Yes, Your Honor. However, count one charged him with intent to distribute as well, and that's what Attorney Nakos admitted and told the jury to find him guilty of.
So that 0.68 was, he was charged with possession with intent to distribute?
Yes, Your Honor. Precisely the same thing he was charged with in count two, which charged him with the same conduct just 3 months later. By admitting that Mr. Holman possessed and with the intent to distribute in July of 1999, he admitted to the jury that Mr. Holman was in fact a drug dealer, and he made it more likely that they would also find him guilty of the other drug crimes with which he was charged.
Now, in the opening statement, it appears he admitted guilt on count one, but at least he drew the distinction that this was user quantity,
yes, Your Honor,
not distribution. So the impression one could get it would be that the argument was going to be that this was just user quantity, not distribution quantity, but that was seemed to be abandoned altogether by the time we got to closing argument,
yes,
when he just said find him guilty. But he... it was tantamount to saying he was guilty even in the opening statement, but there was some distinction drawn. And that opening statement, the words he used there, I think maybe compare more comparably to some of the cases the government cited.
Absolutely.
So if he had stayed along that train, would your position be there was no error?
No, Your Honor, our position would still be that there was error because the law requires the defendant to consent to his trial counsel before his trial counsel pleads him guilty. The United States Supreme Court stated in Boykin versus Alabama that the decision to plead guilty or not guilty is a decision reserved solely for the accused and must be made with intelligent and voluntarily. And in this case, there was no such procedural safeguards afforded to the defendant. What happened is, even in the opening statement alone, Attorney Nakos told the jury that his client was guilty of conduct to which he never admitted and conduct which he entered a not guilty plea to before trial. It is our position that Mr. Holman should have received the procedural safeguards of Criminal Rule of Federal Procedure, Rule 11, which entitles that when a guilty plea is entered, it ensures that certain procedural safeguards are met so that the guilty plea would have been made voluntarily and knowingly. In this case, Mr. Holman received all of the prejudices, yet none of those procedural safeguards when his attorney entered that plea for him.
Well, could his silence be deemed a waiver?
No, Your Honor.
I mean, you know, the defendant himself.
In this case, the record does not indicate that he ever consented to his trial counsel's so-called strategy, and the United States Supreme Court stated in Boykin versus Alabama that such consent is not to be presumed from a silent record. Therefore, in this case, there is no evidence of any consent, and therefore it should not be presumed, and Mr. Holman's trial counsel effectively told the jury to check the guilty box in the verdict form in his closing argument. And not only was he in effect admitting he was a drug dealer, but he was also subjecting him to the same sentence on those drug counts, because under the rubric of relevant conduct, the sentencing judge could have taken into account the other quantities involved, and he could have received the same sentence on those drug counts.
And your position would be not to just reverse count one, but we should reverse all the counts he was convicted of and send it back.
Yes, Your Honor, it is our position that he received an unfair trial as to all four counts in this case, and therefore he is entitled to a new trial because he did not receive the processes and rights that he is due under the Constitution.
So in terms of Strickland, you would say that all the evidence, even though the evidence appears to be overwhelming, that because the constitutional violation was so great, he was tainted, his entire trial was tainted.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It is our position that we meet the two-prong test set out by the Supreme Court in Washington versus Strickland because Attorney Nakos's performance was, if nothing but, absolutely deficient, and that it prejudiced the defendant, and that when ineffective assistance of counsel is at issue, it is never, ever harmless error, and therefore he should receive a new trial on all four issues.
Well, normally with ineffective assistance of counsel, we caution the appellant that this is really a habeas challenge because you normally have to have a hearing or at least for the attorney to say what his trial strategy was or to that sort of thing. I guess what you're saying is that there's no strategy
that is our
that
position.
Could possibly justify it. Therefore, this shouldn't be a collateral attack as opposed to direct appeal because this is the only shot he gets. If you take it now,
absolutely,
you don't have a habeas challenge.
It is our contention that there's sufficient evidence in the record to address this on appeal. I see my time is going into my rebuttal. If there's no more questions, I'd
like right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Bob Turgovich. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Fort Wayne Division of the Northern District of Indiana. The scenario is on July 31st, the defendant was arrested coming out of a hotel, and there, that's when the 0.68 grams were discovered. Several months later, on October 27th, he stopped by two of the same officers, and that's when the firearm and close to 100 grams of crack cocaine are discovered. Now, the defense counsel, when he's at trial, is faced with a different weight of evidence on the two counts, and one that he has trouble handling under his theory of defending the more serious counts, the counts 2 through 4, which is that...
Well, tell us, do you have any case law that says that he can enter a guilty plea in defiance?
I think I cited
I know you did. Did you ever read the American Bar Code of Ethics? It's right there clear that you can't do it.
Well, here I think the whole trial strategy and the one that the defendant went along with at trial was...
How do we know the defendant went along with it? There was no waiver taken. The judge didn't ask about it. The government didn't ask upon hearing an opening statement that this was tantamount to a plea. Can we have a little sidebar here and find out, Judge, because it sounds to me like this is a plea. And we don't have any word from the defendant on
there
the record.
Anything in
nothing.
This record.
There is nothing on the record. I cannot point
nothing.
You to anything, and I would agree that there is nothing
what
on the record.
Lawyer did.
However, even though he did that, there is overwhelming evidence. The jury is instructed to consider the count separately. So even if he pleads to count one and we have a problem with that, counts two through four, just because he's admitted to be a dope dealer, the jury then can't find he's a dope dealer on counts two through four.
Are you saying there is no implication from that one count on the other drug counts?
I'm saying that the jury is instructed that there should be no implication. They are to weigh the evidence separately, and there is...
But you, as a lawyer, can you rationally argue that?
I certainly can. I tell the jurors to do their duty, and I think the court assumes that the jurors do their duty.
Sure they do. I didn't say that. But you don't think there's any implication that if the lawyer comes in and says, this man is guilty of count one, this is a drug count, and the other counts are related to it, that they're not going to take it into consideration?
I mean,
there is no law against using common sense either. This is on the part of the defense attorney.
Well, if we do that, then we're going to have to assume that the jurors didn't follow the law that they were given to follow.
Well, none of the cases that you cited, you couldn't find any case where a court said that that was permissible or that was harmless error, could you? Because all those cases you cite are either situations where there's consent or they're different charges, as counsel pointed out.
Well,
and not the same charge.
I don't agree with that. This is not the same charge because one is in July and one is in October.
No, the same fundamental charge, drug possession.
But I think the cases that the defendant has cited are instances where the charges are knotted together, where you're, say, in the one case, you're admitting to an underlying felony that's a necessary element of the offense that eventually they're found guilty of. That's not the case here. They're two separate, totally separate offenses.
Yeah, but it's the same charge. Possession with intent to distribute drugs.
Okay, an analogy then. If, in this case, Mr. Nyquist had said, with respect to counts two through four, the defendant possessed the crack cocaine, but he didn't possess it with the intent to distribute, maybe then that is a closer analogy to the felony, admitting to the underlying felony in a felony murder case.
That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. But that's not what we have here, because he's not admitting to anything with respect to the October 27th incident. He's admitting a totally separate incident that the jury is told to consider separately. In fact, they are precluded from, the rules of evidence would be that you can't consider that he's a dope dealer on this day merely because he was a dope dealer on an earlier day.
And was there an instruction to that effect given to the jury?
There's an instruction to the jury that they must consider the evidence as to each count separately. So the fact that he pled guilty to one count, or the attorney pled him guilty to one count.
But don't you think, given, you know, the jury trying to make a judgment that in this unusual situation, at the very least an instruction to the effect of what you just summarize for us. I mean, something more specific than just the general each count, you look at the evidence on each count, and you weigh the evidence on each count, and you return a verdict on each count. Don't you think something more was required when the man stood up and said, check the guilty box for count one?
See, I think that, and I think your Underwood case here is applicable. If this defendant had pled guilty to count one, and the defendant got on the stand and testified and said nothing about count one, which I think tells us that he wasn't asked, but he could have said something. He could have been asked. It tells me that he consented to the trial strategy.
Blabber out in front of the judge and said, now this lawyer was not telling you the truth. I did not want to plead guilty to count one. You don't. You didn't expect him to say that, did you?
During the course of his testimony, Your Honor, he could have said something about count one. It tells me that...
Now the burden is on him.
Right.
Even though the defense counsel
pled him guilty when he knew he didn't have his consent.
I think that the approach here was this was their strategy. If he had pled guilty to count one before coming to court, would he have been able to get into evidence the fact that he pled guilty? No.
No.
It would not have.
Right.
It would not have come in. And his strategy
was. And that's why during a trial you don't ever take a guilty plea in front of the jury.
Okay. But here the defense strategy was to have the defendant appear credible on count one, his admission of guilt there.
Well, he must have got.
In contrast, that
he must have got his diploma under false pretenses if he thought that he could get away with this.
Why was he charged with intent to distribute on .68?
He was coming out of the hotel to deliver it to a cooperating individual.
So that was a setup.
It was a setup. Right. And in fact, one of the reasons...
So there isn't any question that's what he was up to. So
we can talk about where Mr. Nakos got his law degree, but the fact is here he was presented with overwhelming evidence, in my view, an unwinnable case, and he chose this strategy the defendant said nothing about at any point, and this defendant, if you knew him, is more than adequately capable of saying something.
Well, you knew this, then, and he knew it, then you should have taken that part of the guilty plea in the absence of the jury and saying that is not before you.
Right.
And that was the judge's obligation to.
And I don't have a quarrel, as I said, with the weight of the evidence.
There's
it's
no.
not the weight of the evidence, because the weight of the evidence is overwhelming. And I would go all the way with you if this was a strategy, and this strategy had been adopted by the defendant and articulated in some way. But it wasn't. So.
Now you're thinking, what do I say next? Go ahead.
I'm thinking nothing I say next is going to help.
Go ahead.
If the litmus test is that the defendant had to agree to this, mm-hmm. I mean, I know from talking to Mr. Nakos that, in fact, this was their strategy. But there is nothing in the record that says
exactly.
That.
That's exactly right. It's problematic for everybody. Nobody is covered. The judge isn't covered. Defense counsel isn't covered, nor is the prosecutor. You know, and somebody in that courtroom should have said, you know, he's actually pleading guilty. We better do something here to make sure this is clear for the record, because it's totally silent, and that's the problem.
There's no doubt there's overwhelming evidence. Overwhelming.
Well, I guess I would rest my efforts then on the fact that you can't assume that the jury, at least I believe, you can't assume that the jury was going to be so swayed by this plea on count one that the overwhelming evidence on counts two through four, you know, go out the window, and therefore we have to have a new trial.
You're just going to get more experience, that's all. I can never take that from you.
I don't need any more experience, Your Honor. I thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Your Honor, we just have a few points on rebuttal. First,
one thing about more experience is that you may not need more experience here on this case.
Right, you may want to sit down, but go ahead.
We just wanted to quickly say that it's very telling in this case that neither the prosecutor nor the defense attorney asked Mr. Holman in his direct testimony about count one, and that the deficient performance in this case tainted the entire trial, and common sense says that it made conviction on the rest of the counts more likely. And if there's no other questions, we rest our case.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I'd like to tell you an old Irish saying, but I better not. The court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m. Thank you very much.